This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Take this woman as your lawful wedded wife.
Ooh, yeah!
Oh, no.
Place the ring on her finger and repeat after me. With this ring, I thee wed.
Hello, and welcome in Place to Be Nation, and welcome to With This Ring, our second edition on
WCW.
I'm your co-host, Ryan Everett.
I'm your co-host, Cindy Everett.
Yes. And tonight we will be looking at, we went old school and looking at six matches, mainly from Jim Crocker Promotions. The last one, we kind of cheated a little and went 2 months into the WCW era, but...
Okay. Well, yeah, I guess that's the one thing I was going to ask you when we were watching. Like, they kept on talking about, like, the NWA.
Right.
So what's that in
so the NWA
to?
Was...
Everything.
Everything. Basically, all the promotions except WWF.
Oh, okay.
But, like, as the 80s went on, Jim Crockett Promotions became the most powerful group of the NWA.
I think you've gone through this with me before.
Yeah.
It's starting to sound familiar. All these acronyms are starting to run together.
Right, yeah. It gets easier as we go. Like, eventually we just got to WCW.
Right.
And that's like
the
from
monolith,
89
but,
on. And
but right now it's the little fragments.
Right. So Jim Crocker Promotions is... when we start the matches, it's the promotion in the Mid-Atlantic area.
Okay.
And that would eventually, as they... grew bigger and bigger because they had the 2 hours on TBS each week. They kind of expanded and took over other NWA territories.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, the first match we watched was a little bizarre because there's no commentary.
Yes, so July 9th in the
Charlotte Coliseum.
Yep. In Charlotte, obviously. It's... July 9th, 1983, and it's U.S. champion Greg Valentine against Roddy Piper. And in this was part of the first group of matches that dropped on the WWE Network in their section called Hidden Gems.
Oh.
So literally, the only people that had seen this match before were the 5,000 people or whatever were there.
Gotcha.
And then they just threw this on the network. Like,
really?
Yeah, because... all these house shows that Jim Crocker Promotions had, especially in, like, Charlotte, probably, like, Greensboro, they're bigger towns, they taped, but they just never aired them.
Did anything with the tape? Okay.
So they just put this out there, like, in the middle, like, 2 years ago. Just, here's a 15-minute match.
And that was your first time seeing this?
Yep. And that was, like, anyone's.
Oh, anyone's first
time.
Like you said, except for people who saw it live.
So the storyline there was... Greg Valentine was the U.S. champ.
Okay.
He had lost the belt and then won it back from Roddy Piper. And after he won it back, he hit Roddy Piper in the ear with a belt.
Oh.
Bloodying his ear. And that kind of...
What was
the
ear?
Yes.
Your accent, I said air.
No.
He even hit in the air?
Hit him in the ear. So that started the basis for their, like, feud over the next... really, the next year, they kind of feuded off and on for the U.S. title.
Gotcha.
So this first match is technically 1341. And
what is this GeoCities website you're on?
It's listing the match.
Oh.
The history of WWE.com.
Oh. I wonder who they're... They didn't use Squarespace or anything, it looks like.
No, well, it's old. It started in 1999.
The website?
I think so.
Really? It's still running?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Continue.
So it ends in DQ when, after Greg Valentine keeps going after Roddy Piper's air, and eventually he just gets pissed off and
like,
goes crazy. Yes. Wraps him in the ropes, begins choking him, and then like the other wrestlers come out to kind of break it up.
Yeah, who are those guys?
It was just a bunch of, like...
I had that in my notes from the
nobodies who probably... Like, the first match was Keith Larson and Rick McCord. It's probably those two.
So they weren't doing anything else.
Yeah, they weren't busy. They took their shower. They were just waiting to get their payoff and go home. And decided to get involved here. And the reason this match, it is... They don't bust out a lot of different moves.
No.
But it is just punching and kicking, and it is probably one of the best matches where with the least amount of moves, I think.
Really?
Just because it's so, like, you feel that they don't like each other.
Yeah.
It's
a lot of animosity.
You know, yes. It's a real, it feels like a real fight almost, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it was kind of hard to get the commentary would have helped me a little bit.
Yeah, it is difficult without the commentary, but I think in a way that almost kind of adds to the feel of the match, I think. Like, it just kind of even makes
like
it more like,
yeah,
like, all you really need to know are these two guys don't like each other. And
no, they do not.
And they don't.
Have you found that Greg Valentine action figure yet?
Yes, I did.
Really?
At Target a couple weeks ago.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I was looking for it for you.
Oh, thanks.
Well, I'll stop looking at it.
Okay. Maybe. Oh, I mean, if you find another one, I could sell it online.
Okay. I'm sure most people who listen to this podcast know about your side hustle. Flipping wrestling figures.
Yeah. It's not that hard to figure out.
Right. Yeah, I didn't think it was a secret. I just said it's a recent interest.
So then this match is actually our next match as well.
Mm-hmm.
As we go to...
But this one was a little different. I feel like I was looking back through this. There's a couple gimmicky. Actually, a lot of the gimmicky matches come up next.
So it's on Thanksgiving Day, November 24th, 1983. 15,000 people.
4 months later.
Yep. And it is Roddy Piper defeats U.S. champion Greg Valentine in a non-title match, which the announcers kind of stumble on that quite a few times. They don't know if it's non-title or title.
Yeah, well...
And this is a dog collar match, which explain...
Okay, so a dog collar match is where you wear your dog collar around your neck.
Yep.
And so is your opponent. And they're attached. I think Baby Jake wants to tell us the dog collar match.
How did you think about the dog collar match?
Yeah, so the dog collar matches are attached to each other with a chain.
Yes. And you can use the chain
as a weapon.
Yes,
obviously.
They do that quite a bit.
I think they kind of died down. You mentioned that, because it wasn't really gimmicky at first.
Right, yeah. At first, there's a lot of, like, tugging of necks and stuff to see who has the stronger neck, I guess.
Right.
To kind of get dominant.
Finally bunches up the chain.
Yeah. Starts whipping them with it.
Yeah, I think that's the correct use.
Yeah, I would do that. Or just ball it around your fist and use it like that.
They do that too?
They do that a few times, yeah. Yep. And then, so this was Starrcade, and...
Yeah, how does that... Was that... You told me about this before, but
so Starrcade,
like, the genesis of the holiday.
Well, for... It being on Thanksgiving, a lot of big shows were always on either Thanksgiving or Christmas. And, like, this was it says it was a matinee, so.
Oh, so right when everyone should be eating turkey?
Or wait, no, it doesn't say. Sorry. That's something else I saw. No, so I think it was just at night, like.
Okay, yeah.
People eat Thanksgiving and.
Go out to see some wrestling.
Yeah, go out to see some wrestling. And it was kind of like, because, you know, back then I think there were just two football games.
Oh, okay.
And the same thing, like Lions playing morning, Cowboys playing the afternoon, and then you eat your dinner, and then you go and watch wrestling. And so what they did with these early Starrcades was they didn't have pay-per-view yet, so they would do closed circuit.
Okay.
So, I mean, and especially with it just being in the territory, like, so this was in Greensboro, so probably in Charlotte, Atlanta, Asheville, Durham, all those cities that they usually went to, they would have a theater, and they would just be playing it on the movie theater.
Oh. And they charge people admission for theater?
And that's that's actually what they ended up doing for the first WrestleMania.
Really?
It was on closed circuit, and that was,
huh.
The thing with that, though, it was nationwide. And they ended up having, like, over... They said, like, once they knew they had 1 million people watching, they knew that it was going to be a success.
How would that work with the theaters, though? Like, would the theaters get, like, a...
They'd have a live feed to it.
Okay.
It would just be beamed to them somehow. I'm not really
sure how
it worked out.
But... Yeah, me neither. I didn't realize that was a thing.
Yeah. So that's how they, like, reached out and were able to tie it up to people. And then eventually a show like this would come out on VHS, but that would be well after the fact.
Is that when you first watched them?
No, I saw this. I think I rented a Best of Starrcade tape.
Okay.
It was like all the big matches from the first five or so.
Yeah, I was going to say, in your youth, were you as into WCW or were you strictly WWF?
No, I was. The first 2 years, I was strictly WWF, and then I kind of just wandered on to WCW one night. And then, like, saw Sting and Ric Flair and was like, oh, these are... Well, Ric Flair I knew from WWF, but Sting,
right.
And it was like, oh, these are those guys on those other wrestling tapes at Blockbuster.
Oh, let me go down that aisle.
Then I started renting those as well and kind of understanding them more and getting the whole backup.
Sting never went to WWF, did he?
Not until 2014.
That's right. But, like, was he the only, like, who else didn't cross over?
That's about it.
I was going to say, everybody did.
Everyone did. I mean, Goldberg was only, like, in WCW the last 3 years. But he came to WWF in 2003. But he didn't cross while WCW was in business. But that's about it as far as, like, the big stars.
Sorry, a little bit off track. But then what about the... how's the new one doing? Because I'm kind of thinking about offshoots from WWE.
Oh, AEW?
AEW, yeah. They're not great timing with COVID.
Yeah. Well, they're...
I kind of forgot about it.
They're doing okay. They're pretty strong ratings-wise on Wednesday nights. And, and now they're kind of, I think, getting, just like WCW back in the day, if you're on TNT when playoff basketball is going around, your schedule's going to get kind of jerked around a little bit.
Well, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yep. So getting back to this match, it's actually kind of interesting that this was November 83, and... In January of 1983, Roddy Piper's in WWF. And March, I want to say, of 84, Greg Valentine was also in WWF. Because they both
migrated
in. Roddy Piper here is, like, beloved by the crowd.
Yeah.
And goes to WWF and becomes the biggest heel in all of wrestling, feuding with Hulk Hogan.
What was the year that match we watched with him? We put, like, the posters up in the ring.
Oh, against Bruno Sammartino. That would be 86.
Yeah, people did not like him.
Yeah, yeah. He was... His job was just to be the biggest dick in all of wrestling, and he...
That'd be a fun job.
Excelled
though.
At it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be a good character. Like, he played that character well, for sure.
Yeah, he did. He definitely knew how to do it. So, anything else about the Roddy Piper, Greg Valentine feud? Matches.
I think I liked the dog collar. I don't know which one I liked better. The dog collar one started out, like I said, it wasn't really like a real match per se.
Right.
It was like a gimmick. So, and the one that was the silent one was pretty good too.
Yeah.
I think I actually ended up ranking that one above. So, what do you think?
Yeah, I think, like, in the overall ratings, the dog collar will finish higher because it's more well known.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just because, I mean, people have heard of the other one, but. It was added to the network 2 years ago, so it had a little bit of buzz then, but that's kind of died down now.
What about, was the dog collar match, was that, like, accessible?
Yeah, like, Starrcade, even though technically this isn't a pay-per-view, it's included in the list of pay-per-views on the network.
The
so
TV,
that was, yeah.
The movie theater,
like, all the Starrcades are on the network, and have been since the get-go, so it's always been.
It's always been in the canon.
Yeah.
What's a Starrcade? Is that like a... I think of like an arcade. Like, what's... Who came up with that name?
Dusty Rhodes came up with it. And I think it... Star... I don't know what it's a playoff of.
Come on, you should know that.
I could look if it's... I mean, Dusty Rhodes came up with, like, every...
Everything.
Every name of...
You found the Wikipedia page pretty fast.
Say why
Starrcade
was...
logo used until 2017. Are they having Starrcades up until 2017?
Well, there was not... Here, look at the listing of them.
Okay.
So, 2000 was the last one in WCW, and then in 2017, WWE started having them again.
Oh, okay.
And they're just
That's
like...
That's kind of cheating.
They're just like one-hour shows at... And basically in like southern arenas right around, like, right after Thanksgiving.
Gotcha. So they just want an extra, like, an extra revenue boost. And stuff.
Yeah.
Let's give this one a try and see what happens.
Yeah, it doesn't say on the Wikipedia why it's Starcade.
Well, if any of our listeners know, they can
and
write to you, I guess. I don't know. We don't have an email address for this show.
There's a disambiguation.
Yeah,
it was a video arcade game show from 1982 to 1983.
Well, yeah, that's exactly what the
name
is. So
I guess that's
like.
What it... Although he spelled it with the double R, whereas this just has the one R.
Yeah.
So I guess that's what it's from. Still doesn't really explain
doesn't know.
It
really
what
doesn't.
It is. I guess, like, all the biggest stars are there.
But what's the arcade part?
They're fighting in an arcade?
No, I don't think that's right. I don't think that's right.
All right. So, moving on, we go to 1985 Starcade, The Gathering.
Like Magic?
Yes.
Starcade, The Gathering.
And this one is also a U.S. title match.
Oh, this is another gimmicky one.
Yes, it definitely is.
It was like kind of like almost like cartoonish, like comical.
So, it is Magnum T.A., who is like... The heartthrob, the everyman, like the blue collar everyman.
Magnum T.A. is the everyman?
Yeah.
I don't know. I saw more as like the pretty boy, like the curls and the blonde
yeah,
hair.
I think, but that wasn't like, at the time though, he was like a man's man.
Gotcha.
Like,
okay.
He was tough.
Sure. All right.
He was good friends with Dusty Rhodes, so he was tough.
Of course, the two of them. The most manliest man.
Yes. Yeah. And he meets Tully Blanchard, who is a dick.
Yes.
As I made sure to tell you, and basically, I think the best description I've ever heard of him for no one who really knows is a Kmart version Ric Flair.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, like, I mean, Harry comes out in the robe, and usually it would have like he'd have a $4,000 suit instead of a $10,000 suit in
come
the reviews.
On.
I mean, yeah, come on. So, this was in the Greensboro Coliseum. This was the first year where they split Starcade between Greensboro and Atlanta. So they switch off match from match.
Wait, really?
So
that sounds confusing.
Well,
unnecessarily
so
confusing.
You're in Atlanta.
Okay.
The first match, the screens come down, and you watch the first match
That's
in Greensboro. The screen comes up, and then you have your match.
Why?
Because
they're broadcasting it, right?
Yeah. Well, it's just closed circuit.
Okay, that sounds more expensive though to run.
Yeah, but
staff to
if you're getting 15,000 people in two arenas.
I guess.
You're selling 30,000 tickets instead of 15,000.
Yeah, I don't know the...
Because you weren't selling... Like, you wouldn't rent out the Omni in Atlanta just for the closed circuit viewing.
All right.
It worked. They made a lot of money for these shows.
Did they?
Shows.
How much?
Well, this one
say?
In particular.
Well, at WCW, I assumed it was... Not a publicly traded company. So.
I mean, it says attendance 30,000 combined.
Yeah, but it doesn't say how much it costs to put it on.
No, but
I like that poster.
This is
okay. All right. Well, I'll just drop it. But
so yeah, so these guys had a long feud.
Have they tried that again since that, like the split?
They actually did it like 5 months later at WrestleMania 2, where they had it at three arenas. They had it in Long Island, Chicago, and L.A. But there they just did, like, five matches in a row.
Yeah, that might be a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Costs or time and everything. Interesting.
Yeah. So this was, again, our first three matches all are about 15 minutes each.
Yeah, they were long.
I think that's kind of
quick
for...
Really? I don't know.
I mean...
We could look at the median.
Yeah.
Because there's some that were... Like, that one Goldberg-Brock Lesnar one we watched was, like...
Right, 4 minutes.
Yeah.
But, like, a lot of, like, the big-time WrestleMania matches are usually at least 20, 25.
That's true.
So it's an I Quit steel cage match.
But he didn't say I quit.
Well, yes, it's kind of confusing. He says... The ref says, do you quit, do you quit? And he screams, yes, yes.
Right.
Because...
Right.
Both guys are bleeding very quickly.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
Magnum,
this is a bloody
or
one.
Tully Blanchard is bleeding from his arm.
Right, yeah.
A lot. And then
we'll explain how it worked with the microphone.
Right. So this is 1985 again. So the wireless microphone technology we see nowadays was
not a thing.
Not yet a thing. So they had to have the wired microphone in the ring with referee Earl Hebner, future WWF referee at the time. He was in Jim Crockett Promotions before he became the evil referee.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, that's
right. Andre the Giant match we saw.
Referee.
How much did the plastic surgery cost, brother? Because that's much more likely that they paid to have plastic surgery than found someone who has a twin.
Yeah. Hey, you know, both.
Yeah,
well,
both are very plausible.
Possible, not plausible.
With the $1 million man's money, everything is possible.
That's true. Yes.
So he's carrying the microphone around, and whenever one Magnum or Tully has their opponent in a compromising position, he would hand them the microphone.
And then they would just yell.
They would
like,
just
say noises, yeah.
And then they would just put, there, no. And then they usually hit each other with the microphone.
Yes, well,
that was, I think that's the only reason they did it, so you hear the solid thunk.
Is that the only, have there been other I Quit matches, or is this?
Yeah, there have been. One of them that is probably best known, and well, there's Mankind versus The Rock that had one. And then there's also, we probably will watch a Terry Funk, Ric Flair one.
Okay.
From like late 89. That's pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah. And it, all of them are, they all do involve
the microphone
being used.
Well, yeah. If you have a prop, you have
that
to use
it. That is obviously part of the rules of a I Quit match, that you use the microphone itself.
Well, you wouldn't be doing it correctly if you...
Of course, if you half-ass it, then what are you even doing it for?
It's like Chekhov's microphone.
So then, Tully Blanchard's Perfect 10 baby doll, his
valet, was there.
Throws the wooden balsa chair in the ring.
Oh, that thing was like shattered immediately. It was like IKEA wood.
Right. Well, I think it was meant to do that.
Right. Well, obviously...
Spoiler alert.
No, I think I know that because it had a very, very dramatic stab.
Yeah, so the
Magnum TA was holding it right above his eye, basically.
Yeah, so they basically just got a stake of wood and are trying to stab each other with it.
Yeah, it's like splinters.
And then, so Tully keeps trying to get Magnum, and Magnum fights him off.
But they really milk it.
Yes,
they really
it's not like he tries for 5 seconds and then gets it. It's a good, like minute and a half, that final sequence.
Like the stake, like, hovering above him. But then Tully, not Tully, Magnum TA reverses it.
Yep. And then he
stabs him in the head.
Stabs him and holds it there until, like you said, Tully just goes, yes, yes.
And he doesn't say I quit.
True.
He says yes.
Yes.
And also, like, he stabbed him in the head, but it didn't really. Not really.
Well, yeah, they have him blocking the views.
Right,
so.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the type of thing when I was, if I would have seen that when I was like 10, I'd be like, oh my God.
Yeah, and that's a reason why this match is like, hearing people talk, there's a good possibility this ends number one.
Really?
Yeah, because I think, like you said, a lot of people
saw it when they were 10.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, for me, the Ultimate Warrior,
gotcha.
Randy Savage match, like, it's one of the big
it was their
early matches. Yeah.
WCW.
Right. So I think
that's
getting
that.
A lot of high praise. And I mean, it's a really good match. I don't think it'll be in my top 20, I think.
Okay.
But I don't, not my top.
Oh, mid tier?
Yes. All
right. Yeah, I mean, it was good. I think like the parts of them like yelling to the microphone kind of threw me off.
Yeah, it is kind of weird if it's the first time you've ever seen that type of match.
They normally don't do that often.
No, they've kind of gotten away from that a little bit. All right, and real quickly, I want to tell you all the things going on the Place to Be Wrestling Network. Chris Zellner and Devin Hales are back with the Place to Be Nation SummerSlam 2020 reaction show.
The Special Relations Trio welcomes the Podfather himself, Scott Carusculo, to the show to discuss SummerSlam, the Olympics, Great British Rock, and more.
On the 10th episode of Body Press Your Luck, Ryan Everett, hey, that's me, still champion, takes on Steve Williams and Mike Poulin. Will he lose his crown?
Oh, I don't
know.
I'll have to tune into that.
You'll have to listen to find out.
on a jam-packed second episode of NWA Crock and Roll, hosts Sean, Callum, and Dr. G welcome guest Matt Souza to look at May of 1985 Jim Crockett NWA.
Former WWE superstar Colin Delaney joins Ben on the newest episode of Row 1, Seat 1.
On the newest NWA Saturday special, Scott and the Doctor discuss some Thunderdome, before talking about the great career of the enforcer Arn Anderson. What matches of double A's could go in your GWCW ballot? Listen to find out. You watch some Arn Anderson matches.
Yes, he's a big four horseman. He's in those. And Thunderdome is already coming under review because on Raw there was some... It's their like thing where they have all the TV screens with fans on them.
Oh.
So there was already some fans that had Chris Benoit. There was a KKK rally. And there was a beheading.
Oh, Jesus.
Yes. So when you give power to wrestling fans, it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
On the newest Drive Through the Highway to the Impact Zone, Logan and the guys look at the sixth episode of Impact and Weekly Pay-Per-View number 102.
Please rate, review, and subscribe.
And make sure that you also check out the Place to Be Nation Pop feed with great shows that include The Year in Pop, Laugh in Theater, The Great Debate, Diamond Conversations, It Was a Thing on TV, A Piece of the Action, Blockbuster Rewind, and so much more.
Subscribe today. And while you're at it, subscribe to a pair of tremendous podcast feeds.
First, Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position is home to Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, The Brother Sister Rewatch Podcast, The Journey Through Infinity, and more.
Also, check out the new North-South Connection, brought to you by JT Rosero, Chad Campbell, and Aaron George. It's the official home for Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred, The Extreme Three-Way Dance, Jeff Lynn's Wrestling, The Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast, TNA Never Dies, Shrink-Wrapped, and more.
And as we've been going over our podcast, and we'll continue to, we have officially kicked off the 2020 Stretch Project, determining the greatest WCW match ever. You have until New Year's Eve to do research, promote matches, and build your lists. Conversation and rules can be found at /GWCW matches or on the Pro Wrestling Only message board.
On our social media page, the greatest song from a movie tournament has kicked off, so be sure to vote for your favorites today.
And please be sure to check out PlaceToBeNation.com each and every day. We have new voices and fresh takes bringing you articles on topics in the worlds of wrestling, sports, and pop culture, including Trent's SmackDown on Fox Report, This Week in the WWE by John Crow, Paulie's Perspective, Ben's Unpopular Opinion, and Matt's Disney Live Action Journey.
And if you're doing some online shopping from Amazon, be sure to click on the banner on the right side of the Place to Be Nation homepage, or use www.placetobenation.com/Amazon, and it takes you right to Amazon and helps us out Place to Be Nation with no cost to you.
Yep. All right, let's get back to the show. Mm-hmm. So next is actually out of order from what we watched, because next is actually taped January 20th, but aired on Worldwide January 24th, 1987.
Oh, okay.
Ric Flair defends the world title against Barry Windham, and it ends in a time limit draw.
Oh, yeah. That was confusing, too. But I actually really liked this one.
Yeah, this one I...
Oh, the commercial breaks in the middle.
Right.
That one.
Well, this was like... So there was an hour-long TV show every week called Worldwide.
Okay.
And this week, this was the only match on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So...
So they paid as advertisers.
Yep. So, you still need to take the commercial. So they took them and it. The only thing that, because I remember seeing this on, it was one of the first WCW matches that was released on a WWF DVD when they made a Ric Flair compilation.
Oh, okay.
And the thing is, it's a time limit draw. So they say because it's TV time remaining. But then, after the match, they got Dusty Rhodes analyzing the match.
Yeah.
Then they go to commercial. Then Dusty Rhodes comes back and talks about the match more.
So they had more time.
And then Ric Flair cuts an interview at the very end. So they have like 6 or 7 minutes that...
No.
If I was watching at the time, like, little one-year-old Ryan,
yeah,
I would be like, why isn't Barry Windham getting me 6 more minutes to win the title? He had Ric Flair on the ropes, which anytime there's a time limit draw, that's pretty much how they always end.
Oh, really?
With the face just about to win.
Of course.
Then just runs out of time at the end.
Yeah.
Yes. But this is a match that, like I said, first time I saw it was like 2002 or so on a Ric Flair DVD. And I could not believe at the end that it was 45 minutes.
Oh, it felt long.
Really? It does feel long, but it's not like they sit in a hold for 5 minutes.
That's a good point.
It's like very action-packed for a 45-minute match.
That's true. There's not like the long like arm bars.
Right, yeah. It is moving fast. Like, it felt like a 20-minute match to me.
Okay.
Which is long still, but...
Right. So, yeah, Ric Flair, I just think between that and the 1992 Royal Rumble, Ric Flair's got some staying power.
Oh, yeah. Well, he calls himself the 60-minute man.
Oh, that's why.
Well, there's various reasons. He could go 60 minutes in the ring, or he could go 60 minutes anywhere else.
Okay.
Where he's just wearing the robe.
Oh, gotcha. Is that what he said?
Yes. Numerous times.
Yeah, it sounds like something he would say.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, this match, I have it 10 out of 10.
Really?
And it will be in my top 10 for sure. Oh,
spoilers.
Yeah.
Well, not spoilers. The point of this podcast.
Yes. To get the list down.
Right. Right.
So, next we go to...
I don't think I have any more notes. Oh, this is the goofy ref.
Oh, yeah. This is Tommy Young.
Oh, that's his name.
Yeah, he's the head NWA ref of the time. And, yeah, his thing was getting involved. And, like, I don't like him.
No.
Like, the pushing Ric Flair, and then Ric Flair falls down.
Yeah, and he's, like, putting his arm underneath their shoulders. Yeah. It's like... People aren't there to see you, buddy.
Yeah, he's very divisive. Someone say he's the best.
Who says he's the best? Okay.
People are like,
okay, people that have different opinions.
Yeah,
that's
people
true.
Think he's
yeah.
the best, and other people are like, okay, dial it back here, buddy.
Yeah, I'm definitely
that's
in the
what I'm in. Yeah, I don't think. I mean, referees could detract from a match, and I think he does that. Next is July 4th, 1987, at the Omni in Atlanta, the first ever War Games match.
Yeah.
So, you have your own experience with the War
Games?
We
did go to War Games back in November, and yes. I liked it a lot.
Yes. So, this is a little different. The cages has a roof on it.
That's so they couldn't jump off the top.
Yes, which, I mean,
also the War Games.
I don't think Dusty Rhodes was going to be jumping off
that's
the top.
True. Also, the War Games, we went to get lots of props in the ring. Like the women's one, they had all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, and... The men's one also tables and
oh, that's right.
stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's not. Yeah, it's just punching each other here. It is.
And doing that weird sit-up move.
Yes. So it is the four horsemen, Ric Flair.
But there's five of them.
Well, Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, Lex Luger, Tully Blanchard, and their manager, J.J. Dillon, against Dusty Rhodes and Nikita Koloff, the Superpowers. Because
yeah,
it's
I saw
Russia.
Writing down the names after this.
Russia and the American Dream.
Oh, okay.
And then the Road Warriors, Hawk and Animal, and their manager, Precious Paul Ellery.
Yep.
So.
That's the thing. So what? The manager didn't really have like any sort of managerial duties, right?
No. I think they're involved in the coin toss.
Oh, okay.
Which they have where it decides who will go in next. And spoilers for any War Games match, it's always going to be the heel team that wins because. We can't have faces taking advantage of it.
That's true. So, we didn't really watch the commentary, but can you talk a little bit about the origin of, like, how did Dusty Rhodes come up with this?
So, it was just kind of like, I mean, the Four Horsemen had been around for like a year and a half at this point, and just been feuding with, originally it was Dusty Rhodes, and then Magnum TA kind of got involved, but then,
should have
brought
cute,
this up about Magnum TA. In 1986, it was kind of setting up that he was going to be the guy, like beat Ric Flair at Starrcade, become champ, and he wrapped his Porsche around a light pole, and at first they thought he was paralyzed. He would eventually walk again, but he never wrestled again.
Really?
Yeah, so, I mean, he was like 26, 27.
Oh, jeez.
It was just career. And, I mean, he was able to become a broadcaster.
That's good.
For them, but yeah. So that kind of So what they needed to do, they needed to make someone a face to challenge for Ric Flair at Starrcade 86. So they took Nikita Koloff, who was this huge jacked up Russian.
Yeah, he can't be a face. He can't be a Russian face in the 80s.
Here's the thing, though.
Wait a second.
Biggest feud had been with, they feuded, him and Magnum TA feuded all the summer of 1986. So after Magnum TA got injured, he came out and gave an interview saying, like, I'm so sorry for Magnum TA. You know, he was my greatest rival. He was the only guy who could go in the ring with me. And then later in the night, the Four Horsemen were beating up Dusty Rhodes, as they did all the time. And Magnum TA actually came out and made... I mean, sorry.
I was going to say, whoa.
Yeah, big spoiler.
Yeah.
Came out in his wheelchair. No. So Nikita Koloff came off and saved Dusty Rhodes, so they shook hands. And then from then on, they were the superpower tag team.
That could be
two.
Gotcha.
And then...
That could be some, like, cheesy movie where, like, the wrestlers come together
yes.
and have a...
For world peace. Yeah, well, it's kind of, the end of Rocky IV, if Drago actually shook hands with Rocky instead of just storm to the back.
Right.
And just had Rocky give the speech along that ended communism.
True.
And then the Road Warriors were always kind of feuding with the Four Horsemen also.
Well, it seems like the feud Four Horsemen was, you know.
Well, they were the big
like
heels that would feud with all the
right.
big top faces. So
right.
they needed a match to kind of decide it all, and Dusty Rhodes claims that he was just kind of thinking of it.
Were
and
skiing?
Yes. Yes. The War Games documentary that unfortunately isn't on the network.
Really?
It was released in like 2013, so I don't know why it isn't on there, but yeah, he gives his stories about how he came up with it while skiing and then drew a sketch of it on a cocktail napkin or something. And yes, so War Games, and it's, so two guys start for 5 minutes, then every 2 minutes, a member of another team comes in.
Yep, and then you can't win until everybody's in.
Right, and once everyone's in, it's called the Match Beyond. And when the Match Beyond begins, the only way to win is...
submission.
Or
tap out.
Surrender. Yes. Tap out wasn't a thing for about 10 years.
Okay.
But no.
Same concept.
Yeah, it is. It is. But tap out came like from UFC.
Oh, okay.
That was how they. It's like in a couple of matches, we've seen people in a submission hold slamming the mat.
That's true.
That was more like to show that they're in pain, not that they're submitting.
Gotcha.
So every guy comes in, pretty much everyone bleeds.
Yep.
Just about.
Yeah,
at least. And then Paul Ellering, the Road Warriors manager, comes in and he has his little spike thing that they would
hit
on their arm, and he's just hitting people with it.
Well, yeah, it's gonna.
And then they eventually go after J.J. Dillon and
Paul Ellering. Like, what does that name sound familiar?
He was in NXT.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
With the Authors of Pain, he was.
Yeah. Oh, that's him.
Yep.
Oh,
same guy.
Okay. Okay.
Yep.
Now it makes sense.
It's all connected.
Fitting together. Oh, yeah, it's really connected. It's the same
yes,
company.
Of course.
Same group of people.
Yeah. So, they actually, the strategy that kind of works out is that the faces are trying to just have the Road Warriors get J.J. Dillon alone.
Yep.
He's obviously the weak link. And they just kill him. Like, literally. Legitimately broke his collarbone.
That's right.
Because
yeah.
I'm sure you've seen it. The Road Warriors did the Doomsday device, usually, where they put one guy up on their shoulders and then close. The guy would come off the top rope with a clothesline.
That sounds familiar.
It's been done plenty since then. But they try to do it here and forget that there's a cage on the roof. So
yep.
they just kind of pick him up kind of awkwardly.
Yeah.
And clothesline him, and he falls
Ooh.
Not the way you're supposed to.
Yeah.
Which is right on his shoulder.
Yeah, that was, it looked painful.
Yes, it was. And then
sure.
they just kind of, after that, they just kind of keep kicking his face into the cage, and eventually he just surrenders.
Yeah, well, I would too if I
yes.
had a broken collarbone.
So the only thing that's kind of, I mean, it's nitpicking because it's probably like one of the most violent matches ever, and gets the point across real well, is that at the end, the crowd doesn't know exactly when it's over.
Right.
Like, the bell rings, so you could kind of figure it out, but, like, in the one ring with everyone else, they're still fighting.
That's right.
It doesn't end
yeah.
immediately. So that's the only... But that's kind of like just...
It's a nitpick.
Yeah, nitpick, and it's kind of just always going to happen with war games.
Without
if it's submit or surrender,
right.
especially.
Doing your own little thing. And
yeah,
ring.
Just see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Oh, it was good.
And then, so this was on the Great American Bash, and what they did in 1987, we kind of talked about this last show, it was a tour,
mm-hmm.
where they had like 27 shows over 35 days or whatever. And this was, being in Atlanta, was one of their big,
stops.
Their big
yeah.
stops.
Makes sense.
So.
Yep. Yeah, did they hype this up, or was this like a surprise?
Yeah,
like...
well, it was kind of, it's kind of odd because like, what they would do is a lot of times they'd hype it up on their Saturday night show. They'd just be like, tonight we're in Atlanta, then tomorrow we'll be in Baltimore. And then
they hype up road war games, though.
Yeah, they
oh, okay.
they did hype it up. Like, they had actually, I think the last match on the Saturday night right before it was J.J. Dillon taking on some jobber. And he does all the Four Horsemen finishing maneuvers
oh.
just to show how great of a wrestler
oh,
he
sure.
is. And I mean, like, before the match, I think all the Four Horsemen come in and beat the guy up. So it's
gotcha.
Just to,
poor guy.
Well, yeah, but it's kind of just to make you want to see J.J. Dillon get his even worse
gotcha.
Than he does.
Yeah, I think he got more than he deserved.
Yeah, he gets it. He gets.
I don't know
it.
How he is at a present person, but he probably didn't deserve to get his collarbone broken.
I think it depends who you ask.
Oh yeah.
I think there's some. Some things
some
about
mortal
him.
Enemies.
Maybe
mortal
not mortal enemies. But. So then, like I said, the Crockett sell to Ted Turner in like December of '88.
Okay.
So we go to February 20th, 1989, the Chi-Town Rumble. So it's technically Ted Turner's WCW, but it's still in spirit, still more
gotcha.
Jim Crockett Promotions than what we'll watch.
Transitioning
future.
Over. Okay.
Yeah.
Have you been to UIC Pavilion for anything?
Yes, I think I saw a String Cheese Incident concert there.
How did that happen?
It was just, it's a jam band that was playing.
I've heard of that. I don't think I've heard any of their music ever.
No, probably not. It's all right.
Why don't you go?
I look kind of like them.
Oh, okay,
it was
that
just
sounds
kind of,
about right.
Yeah, I mean.
Why not?
Yeah. Grateful Dead isn't around, so we'll go to there.
The low rent.
But yes.
I think I saw the Killers there.
Oh, okay.
In 2008?
Yeah, I think the show I went, I think it was 06.
It's kind of small.
Yeah.
And the ceiling's really low in there.
Yeah, it was.
And I'm guessing it was pretty same, much the same, if not crappier in 1980.
Yeah, it says about 7,500 people, 5,500 paid. So it is... Ricky Steamboat pinned NWA World Champion Ric Flair
mm-hmm.
at 23:07 to win the title. And this was...
This one fell shorter than 23 minutes.
Yeah, this was another one where it's boom,
like
boom, boom.
One.
Like,
yeah.
they start off not slow, but just kind of like feeling each other out.
Right.
Like, working the arm and stuff. And this is... So, WrestleMania 3 is Ricky Steamboat versus Randy Savage.
Right.
And then...
Rematch, everyone.
He leaves about he leaves after WrestleMania 4, a year later.
Okay.
And then he says he's retiring. And then he shows up in the like late January of 1989. So he shows up and then right away is put in this feud. And they kind of...
Going back to the family business in North Carolina.
Yes. And they kind of... I mean, they only had three weeks to build the match. But what they kind of did was build on the past because... These guys feuded like in the early 80s.
Oh. And they just kind of...
Jim Crockett. So they kind of just built off of that and mentioned that. And like they always say that Ric Flair defended the title against Ricky Steamboat but could never beat him. He always went to a time limit draw with him.
Hmm.
To kind of make it seem like...
It's a big deal.
Because it's, you know, you can't say, oh, he beat Randy Savage, who's now the WWF champion. Because you can't acknowledge that the other promotion exists.
It's like Voldemort?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Well, that comes and goes also.
Gotcha. Well, yeah, it wasn't the one we watched last week or last episode with like the guys from up north. When Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, I mean.
Oh, but that was a lot later, though.
Yeah, it's different times. You don't want to really, like, at this time especially, acknowledge that another company exists.
Okay.
Especially in 1989, comparing anything to WWF, because it's going to pale in comparison.
Gotcha.
Like, yeah, okay, let's talk about how he beat Randy Savage in front of 93,000 people while we're having our show in front of 8,000 people.
Yeah, that's a good point. You might want not draw those comparisons. So, all right.
Yep. So, but yeah, this is another, and they kind of have three matches in 19. I think they even talked about that on the WCW documentary. And these are like considered three of the best matches of all time.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like Ricky Steamboat has some solid.
Yeah, he's kind of like matches. He's definitely a quality over quantity guy.
Yes, that's a great question.
Because he also would, like here he has a run from January till like July and he's gone for like 2 years.
Hey.
Yeah, so he's not going to stick around and have a match every pay-per-view, but when he's there, he makes it count, basically.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, and this was big because this was one of Ric Flair's longest solid title reigns. He held it from Starrcade 87 till here. So, over a year.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah.
Yeah, it was good sequences, good moves, a lot more high-flying.
Yeah.
Their styles are similar. They're a similar caliber.
Yes. Similar size, really.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of, they're well matched.
Yeah.
Yeah. Comparing this to the Roddy Piper, Greg Valentine first match, it's like
quite a bit
day.
Different.
Yeah, exactly. A little bit more. I feel like Ricky Steamboat, though, if I had one critique, it seems like my sample size of this one and the Macho win, it does seem like his match is like a little choreographed.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny you point, like, because the two matches, they're similar, but
they're mentioned in the same breath?
They're mentioned in the same breath, but they're laid out completely differently. Like, they said Randy Savage would plan out every single move. And here it would be like Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat. All they would say to each other beforehand is, all right, Ricky, you're going to win with an inside cradle in around 25 minutes.
Really?
And they'd do the whole thing in the ring.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Just like the amount of, like, yeah, that's really impressive, all the improv.
Yeah. I mean, they've done the matches with each other so often
that's
that they
true.
Know
yeah.
what the other guy wants to do, so.
Still, I think it's an underrated skill that people don't really realize.
And Ric Flair's always said that, like, people always bring these matches up, but he says they had a lot better matches in, like, 1983 in front of 800 people that only those people saw it.
Yeah, no one was taping those
apparently not.
Camcorders on their shoulder.
Come in with a suitcase.
Seriously.
All right, so now we have to go and rank these matches. So,
oh, you have our rankings there.
Yep.
Okay.
Hold on.
I don't know what your system is. Just tell me what you want me to tell you. Why don't you just tell me the name of the movie you want to see?
So the first one was Roddy Piper versus Greg Valentine, the July 83 one.
Okay.
And then next we have Roddy Piper versus Greg Valentine at Starrcade. And that's the dog collar match.
Mm-hmm. That might be kind of further down the list.
And then
I think about the other ones we watched. These are all good. I think there's, you know, some weeks if there's like clear favorites and clear like losers.
Low runs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I kind of picked like the top of the top here.
Right. Because you got War Games, you got a dog collar match, you got a goofy I Quit match, you got Ricky Steamboat. Roddy Piper.
Alright, so.
Huh.
Roddy Piper versus Greg Valentine. Roddy Piper versus Greg Valentine. Dog Collar. Magnum TA versus Tully Blanchard. War Games. Barry Windham versus Ric Flair. Ric Flair versus Ricky Steamboat. Where would you.
Oh, jeez, yeah. I think maybe just it's the most recent, but I think the Ric Flair Ricky Steamboat is my favorite from this week.
Yeah. don't think that's crazy to say.
Okay.
At all.
I might put the dog collar mesh near the bottom.
Okay, so 5 or 6?
Put it at 6 for now.
Okay.
Oh, well, magnet, oh, that was the equipment. The Barry Windham versus Ric Flair match, I can't really, I don't know, that was not memorable for me. I even forgot what we talked about it, like not only like 10 minutes ago. Oh, the commercial breaks, that's what you're really like. I did not like that one. I moved that at 5.
Oh, okay.
Like I said, it didn't make the same impression on me as it did. Sounds like pretty much everybody else.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's another one that it'll be interesting to see where it is.
Polarizing. Okay, then working after the Ric Flair Sticky Rick Steamboat, I think, as you can tell, I don't really look at this in advance. The first Roddy Piper.
Okay.
Greg Valentine.
That is
one.
Two. Okay.
And then I would say War Games at 3. And they're all really close.
Yeah,
and then,
same here.
I quit match at 4.
Yeah, so.
Ask me again tomorrow. I'll have it
right.
In a different order. So,
I have these last two at 10.
Wait, 10?
10
oh,
out of 10.
That's why
yeah,
you're
this
doing
is,
different
yeah.
than me.
War Games, I think I had at 9.75, so
okay.
Just...
What type of fractions do you guys like?
I mean, you could... This is my own...
Oh, okay.
...rating that... And, like, if I... At the end, I'll have 10 matches ranked 10, I'll just kind of pick
gotcha.
Them against each other.
There you go.
And then I think Magnum TA, I'd probably say that's 9.5, and then probably 9...
For this. Dog
collar, and 9.5 for the... So I'd say Wyndham versus Flair, Flair versus Steamboat, War Games, Magnum TA versus Tully Blanchard, the first Piper Valentine, and then the dog collar. So
okay.
Yeah, the dog collar
yeah.
is our lowest.
Both of our lowest.
But like I said, I wouldn't.
They're still really
be surprised.
Good.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
not like I'm saying it's a crappy match. It's just out of these 6,
it's the most gimmicky. That started out slow, like
yeah.
like tugging on the like and just like playing tug of war with their necks, basically.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, really good matches. And then for next week,
oh, yeah.
we're thing? Going to go from the earliest days in the poll to some of the later days in the poll as we'll be watching WCW Nitro matches.
From what year is that?
Starts in 95.
Okay.
And then I think the latest we'll go is 1999.
Okay.
I don't think there's going to be too much 2000 Nitro.
Well, that'll be definitely a contrast
yes.
from this week.
Yes. And like this is... their weekly Monday night show, so none of the matches are
that
long. Like,
and
the most is probably 15 minutes.
Any blood, or is that out? Is that
yeah, place? That's out.
Oh, good.
Yeah. No, blood was a no thing, a big no-no at that time.
Okay.
Janet Reno was cutting down on violence in television.
simpler times.
Yep.
Okay.
Well. All right. Anything else to add?
No, just looking forward to continuing
this
journey with you.
Yep, through as we go past Jim Crockett Promotions and the NWA into WCW, where the big boys play.
Oh, is that what they said?
Yes, that is their title.
All right, cool.
All right, we'll see you next time.
All right,
thanks.
Bye.
Bye.